Pettersson's in. Elias Pettersson scores! Kachuk scores! Matthew Kachuk, what a goal!
You're listening to...
Another chance, great save by Markstrom.
Here's Kachuk, oh, what a save by Demko.
Rintoul and Sermon.
What's going on? How's your Monday? Hope you're off to a great start. I'm Scott Rintoul. She is Karen Sermon. How was your weekend, Miss Sermon? Now there's a problem. I can't hear Karen. We're trying to figure out a couple of technical issues here, and we will get them as Karen is talking away. I don't know what's going out there in listener land. I do know that I can't hear Karen. I'm not sure if she can even hear me, but we'll get this figured out. She's giving me the thumbs up that she can hear me. We've got so many devices going on here, and when I connect with Karen and we get both of us on the air together, I will ask her on a device update because I've got a television screen going. I've got my computer in front of me. I got my phone here in case we need to text back and forth or something comes in that way in terms of breaking news, and I've got the iPad set up here so Karen and I can be on FaceTime with all of you, and we want you involved in this process because you're going to want to comment when things go down or don't go down. 960-960 or 650-650 throughout the course of the show today. Do we have Karen? Not yet. All right. We'll get her on the air. It is deadline day, as I mentioned. You're waiting to hear the latest breaking news, and we will get that to you throughout the course of the show. It feels like a lot of teams thought it was yesterday because there was significant activity yesterday. There was significant activity on Saturday, which means there's probably not a lot left to be done. But when something happens, as it happens, we will let you know. And the teams in Western Canada, fairly silent, though the David Riddick deal that we speculated and wondered about, it did go down yesterday. We'll talk about that throughout the course of the show. Part of what was a very busy 48 hours for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Are they done? Many insiders think not so much. Perhaps adding something on the back end over these next 2 to 3 hours. Kyle Dubas pushing all those chips in. We kind of knew he was there, and now Karen is there on the program.
Hey, Scotty.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Friday, we had issues on your end, and now Monday, we have issues on my end. It's just the joys of working
remotely
in 2021, isn't it?
It certainly is. And
but
thank
I'm
you for
I'm
being
good
here.
To go.
Excellent. How was your weekend?
You know what? The weekend was pretty good. The weather was fantastic in the Vancouver area. Lots of sunshine. Looks like that's going to continue. A lot of sports, Scotty. You know, even though with that nice weather, didn't really leave the couch too much this weekend. A lot of Masters viewing. A lot of course, seeing what was happening on trade deadline today, but what happened all yesterday. So, yeah, it's been pretty good. How about you?
I had a great weekend, in fact.
Good.
And it's interesting because a lot of those sports you speak of got postponed or pushed back. The Jays game got postponed yesterday. The Canucks were supposed to go back into their facility, and we thought we might get some sort of update as to who was practicing, but they had another positive COVID test. We will talk about that story throughout the course of the morning as well, but it is trade deadline day, and when something breaks, we will get you that information. We are going to go to Adam Forsyth, who is joining our coverage today, and Adam is at our trade desk and our waiver desk, and apparently there has been a waiver claim. Is it Victor Mete, I wonder? Adam, welcome to the program. What's going on?
Morning, Scott and Karen. It absolutely is Victor Mete, and he didn't fall too far down the waiver wire. The Ottawa Senators claiming Victor Mete off waivers from the Montreal Canadiens, while Sami Vatanen has been claimed by the Dallas Stars from the New Jersey Devils. So a couple of D-men on the move early, but still looking for our first trade of the NHL trade deadline.
Very interesting. Thank you very much for that, Adam. You do wonder if Sami Vatanen's claim in Dallas, Karen, leads to a little more excess there with Jamie Oleksiak, whose name has been out there on the blue line market. Does it make it a lot easier for the Stars to facilitate that move now, get something for Oleksiak while now pushing Vatanen into their lineup, a guy who can play a little further down your blue line in terms of the pairing and a guy who can play both sides of the ice as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Jamie Oleksiak's name's been out there. I know it's been rumored to be with the Edmonton Oilers, possibly, maybe with the Winnipeg Jets. We don't know. Of course, Edmonton up against the cap. Winnipeg Jets have a little bit more flexibility because they did make some money moves today with LTIR, Scotty. He's a big body. He's got that playoff run last year to the Cup Finals. Also, last night, put his offensive skills on display for any teams that maybe want to get him a little end-to-end or rush on a nice goal that he had against Nashville. So maybe he's saying, okay, here's a little teaser of what maybe you can get if you trade for me. But it'd be interesting to see. I mean, it's kind of crazy that his name's been out there, but he is a UFA. And I guess for Dallas, it's just about the price coming back.
We will take Oleksiak, but you have to promise us that your sister will send a promotional video with her gold medals, and we can use that as some sort of in-segment during the game opportunity on the big screen. So a couple of waiver claims. Victor Mete makes a lot of sense for the Ottawa Senators as well, a team that's trying to figure out what it's going to be over the next few years. It's audition time in Ottawa, and it has been for quite some time. They moved two defensemen over the course of the weekend as well. So there's an opportunity on that blue line. They sent a couple guys out. They got picks back in return. Mike Riley went to Boston for a third-round pick in 2022. Brayden Coburn went to the New York Islanders for a seventh-round pick in 2022. So there is room for Victor Mete to head into that lineup and play right away.
Yeah, I think it's a good move. Obviously, his time had run out and frustration had run out with the Montreal organization. Kind of one of those, okay, we knew possibly what we had, but he never lived up to those expectations. So get his fresh start on a young team in Ottawa. There is some news out there, Scott. It's just coming in. This is from Kevin Weeks with the NHL Network. Of course, this is not done, but there is some reports out there that I did say the Oilers with Oleksiak, right? Well, Kevin Weeks is reporting the Devils possibly sending Dmitry Kulikov to Edmonton for a draft pick. So that is very curious. That just coming in. Not obviously made official yet, but looks like Edmonton could be shoring up their defense a little bit.
Well, when we get something on a firm front, we'll bring Adam Forsyth back in to break the trades with us throughout the course of the show today. Does Edmonton need to use a brokerage like many teams have already?
Probably.
There is
probably
opportunity out there, and we've seen teams do it. San Jose, New Jersey, among those who have said, yeah, we'll be a salary cap stash for you. What's it going to cost? A mid-round pick, a late-round pick, depending on which situation we are talking about. And we talk all the time, Karen, about cap space and having flexibility. And people look at that just in terms of signing players or trades. Well, this is an opportunity that has arisen in the last number of years with the way salary cap flexibility or lack thereof works in the NHL right now. You're holding cap space at the deadline. You can accrue assets along the way. And it's a big reason that a lot of people, when they talk cap management around the NHL, say, look, it's less about traditional hockey moves. It's more about using that asset in a way that hasn't traditionally been done in the National Hockey League.
Absolutely, and we've seen it done already this weekend. Of course, Toronto, in their acquisition of Nick Foligno, they needed to use San Jose as a broker. It cost them a fourth-round pick. We also saw the fact that with David Savard to Tampa Bay, it meant Detroit had to take some cash back. They were the brokerage in that deal, of course, a 2021 fourth-round pick at all. So it seems, it looks like, Scotty, if you want a team to retain some salary and maybe have to take an AHL salary off that team as well, it's going to cost you about a fourth-round pick. So it's going to be interesting to see what can happen with these teams that are up against the cap crunch, of course, Edmonton being one of them.
It's Rentoul, it's Sermon, it is NHL trade deadline day, and we will have the latest for you. It looks like the Kulikov deal is done. It's a conditional pick that is going back. When we find more about the conditions of that pick, we'll bring Adam Forsyth into this conversation. The Oilers getting a little help on their back end. All right, let's move to the biggest story of the day, and that is Taylor Hall. That deal is done, and it's done in a way, Karen, that no one really expected it to go down. We'd heard for a few weeks, oh, I don't know if they can get a first-rounder. I don't know if they can get a first-rounder. Mm-hmm. And then you see multiple first-rounders go on the weekend. There was a first-rounder involved for David Savard on his way to the Tampa Bay Lightning. More importantly, there was a first-rounder involved with Nick Foligno. Very different type of player. Toronto coveted that type of player and said, we're willing to pay. And they paid multiple picks, and they paid a first-rounder to Columbus as part of the package that sends the former captain of the Blue Jackets to the team he helped beat in the qualifying tournament last year. Oh, pardon me, in the first round of the playoffs last year. No, it was qualifying tournament. That's right.
Qualifying, yeah.
Yeah, it was qualifying. They beat him in five games.
It's hard to distinguish the two, Scotty.
So he doesn't fetch a first. Taylor Hall goes to Buffalo for a second-round pick and Anders Bjork. How much should Kevin Adams be skewered for the return? How much should Boston be applauded for buying low? How much should we be carving other teams for not taking a gamble on Taylor Hall given the price tag? These are all relevant questions in the last 24 hours.
Well, let's talk about that first one you just posed there, Scotty. How much should Kevin Adams be skewered for the return? Yesterday, I don't know about you, I was on Twitter when this trade came down and he was getting carved. Absolutely carved. People are saying, what is going on? Why is this deal happening? I thought to myself, how does Taylor Hall, a former Hart Trophy 3 years ago, not garner more than a first-round pick when, like you just said, Foligno, Palmieri, David Savard, you know, Taylor Hall's got a little bit more cachet, you think, in his past than those three players, but... Here's the thing, Scotty, when you look at trades originally, sometimes you have to kind of see what happened after that or before that when the stuff comes out that maybe got to that trade. We found out today that Taylor Hall basically, shall we say, held Kevin Adams' feet to the fire when it came to where he wanted to go. When he heard that Boston was one of the teams that was in this deal, we heard one of three teams when it was Boston, and he, you know, there was... He said, too, there was interest from Boston last offseason. He basically said, this is where I want to go. So when you look at the things, Taylor Hall, should he have got number one first round pick? Maybe. Was second round pick the best you could get when a player says, I only want to go to that team? Maybe that's as good as well. Also, you could look at statistically, Taylor Hall has had a terrible season. He's got 2 goals. Curtis Lazar, Scotty, who's part of this deal, has 5 goals on this season. I mean, if that says something about how Taylor Hall's season has gone, that speaks a lot of volume. So there's a lot of things that go into this trade. Yes, originally, I would have given, say, Kevin Adams a D, an F for this deal. But the more you know, the more you think maybe this goes up to a C or a B.
Before I comment, let's hear from Taylor Hall. He did speak today. He did a Zoom media availability and talked about the fact that, yes, Boston was interested last summer and that had been on his mind.
Yeah, I mean, really close. I was ready to come to Boston. It didn't work out. And then I was, you know, I had to choose between some other options, but I've always had a ton of respect for the Bruins organization and the city of Boston. I came to Boston with Seguin in 2010, just before our draft. And I love the city. I love the fan base and the way they care about hockey. And every time I've come to Boston since then, I've always really enjoyed my time there. So it's a city that I have a lot of, you know, respect for as a sports city, and I can't wait to get there.
That is Taylor Hall. We will get back to that story in a minute because we do have a trade. It does involve one of the teams on the West Coast, one of the teams we talk about a lot. Adam Forsyth, welcome back. We got trades going down.
Yeah, and this one is a big one. We thought the Canucks might be a little bit quiet, but Pierre LeBrun is reporting that Adam Gaudette has just been traded by the Canucks to the Chicago Blackhawks. We don't know the return or more pieces are involved, but this is Pierre LeBrun reporting Adam Gaudette has been traded from the Canucks to the Blackhawks. A big deal for our local team.
So Adam Gaudette, who has fallen out of favor a little bit in the last couple of years. Karen, this is a former Hobie Baker Trophy Award winner. He's a fifth-round pick of the Vancouver Canucks. He felt like found money because you don't generally get fifth-round picks who are contributing. At one point a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, Adam Gaudette was viewed as the future third-line center, a part of the core for the Vancouver Canucks as this young nucleus makes its way forward. Well, because Adam Gaudette went to college, he's a little older than those other young pieces outside of Bo Horvat in Vancouver. He was deemed a little bit more expendable as they moved him to the wing this year. Hasn't been able to find his scoring touch despite a lot of the underlying numbers in terms of scoring generation being very favorable for Adam Gaudette. He's on his way to Chicago. We will see what the return is. But this also tells us a little something, at least in my mind, about what Vancouver may plan to do with its expansion draft protection.
Yeah, when you look at what Adam Gaudette last year, I mean, pretty good season. You know, 12 goals, 21 assists, and 59 games played. Not too much generation in the playoff bubble, Scotty, but, you know, it's a pretty decent season. You're thinking this year maybe he can expand on that, just 4 goals, 3 assists. And as you said, at one point, Vancouver Canucks fans were looking at Elias Pettersson, Bo Horvat, and then Adam Gaudette as their top three centers, looking at that, you know, with Adam Gaudette being a little bit younger as well, maybe, you know, that can be their core at center for years to come. Whatever happened this year, we know Adam Gaudette had some health issues, Scotty. He said coming into this season, he did have some issues trying to figure out how he could keep on weights. There was that, but he seemed to have had that under control, but whatever happened this season, it's just the production has been not there. Jim Benning said on Friday that he thought he'd be pretty quiet come trade deadline day. He did say, though, it was more he'd be listening. I guess whatever the return is for Adam Gaudette, it was enough to put him on the move.
Well, what's interesting here as well is Adam Gaudette was the first player for Vancouver to go on the COVID list, and Adam Gaudette was the guy that got pulled from practice, and as you just mentioned, because of that, he's gone through his 2 weeks. He is over COVID-19, at least we hope he is for him and his family, and he's back on the healthy list, if you will, in Vancouver and now with the Chicago Blackhawks. And as mentioned, he fell out of favor a little bit for lack of offense this year, moved from center to wing, now goes to the Chicago Blackhawks, a fresh start for him. But in terms of expansion draft protection, it was going to come down in Vancouver, Karen, likely to him or Cole Lind. If you look at the way the Vancouver Canucks are going to protect their 7 forwards, 3D goaltender, most of that is obvious. Now, Gaudette was long seen as a guy who would be protected by the Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then because of what's happened this year, you wondered, is it going to be him? Is it going to be Cole Lind? When they locked up Tanner Pearson last week and gave Tanner Pearson protection against a Seattle expansion draft, well, all of a sudden you had a lot of decisions made for you. Brock Besser, Bo Horvat, JT Miller. Tanner Pearson goes on to that list. Elias Pettersson goes on to that list. All of a sudden, Tyler Motte is probably a guy that's getting protected in Vancouver unless there's some sort of home run deal that comes in for the Canucks here leading up to the trade deadline. Well, you had one spot left up front. Was it going to be Cole Lind, who is expansion draft eligible, or was it going to be Adam Gaudette? And obviously we have at least possibly our answer now. They don't have to protect Cole Lind, but there's a player who's probably going to get an audition over the next 19 games.
You just said that, Scotty. Going to get an audition. He is in Vancouver. Of course, he had that broken nose. They brought him up here to see the doctor. The good thing is he's been through quarantine. So now when the Canucks do get back, they can recall him and see what he's going to do. This Canucks schedule, we'll get more into it as we go. It's brutal down the stretch, Scotty. So this may be an opportunity for Cole Lind to now step into the lineup, kind of showcase himself for next season, show that maybe the Vancouver Canucks, he's worth protecting the expansion draft. Scotty, we do have the return.
Let's go to Adam Forsythe. Adam Forsythe, welcome back to the coverage. What are the Vancouver Canucks getting back in this deal for Adam Gaudette?
Karen, Scotty, at first glance, it's not a lot. Gaudette has been traded to the Blackhawks for Matthew Highmore. He has played 24 games this season for the Hawks. He has 2 assists. He is a center, 25 years old. He has 73 career games in the NHL, all with Chicago, and he was an undrafted free agent. So not exactly a massive return for the Canucks, but the deal is Adam Gaudette for center Matthew Highmore.
And no picks coming back, Adam?
Nothing. It is a one-for-one deal.
Very interesting. It tells you a lot about what the Canucks organization felt about Adam Gaudette, about where he slotted into this situation moving forward, get him into a better situation. But likely, just based on initial return, this is going to get carved by Canucks fan base, who generally looks at the upside of younger players, looks at the upside of Adam Gaudette. As I mentioned, Karen, his underlying numbers have been good this year in terms of scoring generation, though he hasn't been able to find the back of the net, hasn't been able to pile up a lot of points. But this is a player that not many in the Canucks fan base will know much about. And this is likely to be highly criticized, shall we say.
Well, let's just say not just the Canucks fan base may know a lot about Scotty. I think it's fair to say that not a lot in the NHL know a lot about, maybe except for Chicago Blackhawks and that organization. Comes at a lesser cap hit, $725,000 on the cap. He's got 1 year left in his deal. Scotty, I don't know if this will get carved as much at the time that the Thomas Vanek deal got carved for Tyler Motte. That one obviously ended up working out well for Jim Benning. You know, there's always a why not a pick coming back in that one as well. So we'll have to see if maybe this is some sort of deal like that. I don't know. This is kind of like all that I'm comparing it to, Scott, because we just don't know anything about this player, really.
We will wait and see how it goes once Highmore arrives in Vancouver, how much he gets an opportunity to play in Vancouver, because things can change over time, but likely it'll be criticized. We mentioned that there were a couple deals in Western Canada. Dmitry Kulikov has been traded to the Edmonton Oilers this morning. Yesterday, David Riddick made his way to the Toronto Maple Leafs, a move that speaks to the uncertainty about the goaltender position in Toronto right now as far as health goes. We don't know if and when Freddie Anderson's going to play at some point during this regular season. We wondered if the Leafs would fortify their goaltending. They went out, they made the deal with the Flames, third-round pick in 2022 coming back for an expiring contract. And Karen, on paper, looks like a pretty decent return for Brad Treliving and the Calgary Flames, given where they were going with David Riddick, which was nowhere in a couple of months.
Yeah, basically, as soon as they brought in Jacob Markstrom this past offseason, David Riddick's numbers were probably numbered in Calgary. They knew he was a UFA. They got what they could, a third-round pick for him. Brad Treliving's been quoted as saying this morning that he knew the situation they were in, knowing they had an expiring deal, that made them go to market with this player, and they wanted to see what they could get, and in the end, they feel that they got a fair return. I like it because you get potentially something, a third-round pick, for an expiring contract. This is what you want to see. Also, too, for a Toronto, Scott, I think this says more about maybe what the health of Frederick Anderson is than anything, because they already did, of course, have Michael Hutchinson in the system. Maybe they don't believe in Michael Hutchinson if he has to go in as a backup goaltender in the playoffs. Of course, you could just ask Joe Sakic in Colorado about that from last year, but I do think this speaks wonders about maybe what the health of Frederick Anderson is for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It most certainly does. There's no question it speaks to that. And the real question here is, because of the uncertainty around Anderson's health, is David Riddick the second option in Toronto, or say the third option? And likely he's the third option. I heard Chris Johnson speaking about this morning. He's an insider who's very well connected to the Leafs. He believes at some point we're going to see Frederick Anderson again. Jack Campbell, with everything he's done this year and the record-setting 11 consecutive wins for the Maple Leafs out of the gate, Jack Campbell's never been in playoff games. Jack Campbell's record is a little bit inflated. That was a 6-5 win on the weekend for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they've got the fire to do that for him. And I'm not sitting here telling you Campbell hasn't been good. He has. He hasn't been 11-0 good just on that superficial record, and some of that's going to regress to the mean. And how confident are you that if Jack Campbell's your starting goaltender for the playoffs, that everything's going to go no problem, tickety-boo, we'll be just fine? You're hopeful, but you need a better backup plan. And if you're uncertain about Freddie Anderson's health, David Riddick, yeah, he got thrown into the fire last year in a bad situation in what was the elimination game against the Dallas Stars. But he's a guy who's been around. He's a guy who can be on a hot streak. And let's not forget this. Sometimes teams are a little bit influenced by guys who play well against them. David Riddick was really good against the Toronto Maple Leafs this year when he was in a Flames uniform.
Yeah, he was. I think Toronto looked at him and go, oh, well, if he can stop us, then he can probably stop anybody else there around the North Division, at least. I think with David Riddick, you know, he's always had that moniker, that name tag, Big Save Dave from the past. So maybe Toronto's hoping that if he's forced into this situation, he can be a better goaltender for them than, say, a Michael Hutchinson. I think it gives maybe Jack Campbell just a little bit more leeway as well. If he has a bad game, then he can take a breath. Scott, also, too, I mean, there is the aspect that we don't know the health of Jack Campbell. I mean, he's been held out of practices as we've come along. So, in general, for Toronto, it's not just Freddie Anderson, it's also Jack Campbell.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Campbell's never been able to stay healthy, and that's why there are as few starts as there are. And yes, they're all victories this year, but had Jack Campbell been healthier, we wouldn't have talked about as much about Michael Hutchinson and the fact that he's been an under-the-radar good story in coming back, but not a guy that you'd feel very confident in starting playoff games for you. So Riddick on the move, Adam Gaudette suddenly on the move. Mm-hmm. That won't be a popular one in the Canucks fan base, but it's one of those, well, let's at least wait and see what Matthew Highmore is. And if it's he more of a true bottom six player than Adam Gaudette, at least at center, because it's pretty clear that Adam Gaudette wasn't going to be a center for the Canucks organization. Hey, I understand it getting skewered this morning. I understand people going, what do you mean you gave away Adam Gaudette for a guy I know nothing about? He's got 2 assists, as Adam mentioned, in 24 games. He's not coming to Vancouver to produce high-end offense, but is he a reliable option in your bottom six that doesn't cost you very much money?
Absolutely. Scotty, what did Jim Benning say on Friday that they weren't going to have an issue in the summer? He said they don't have cap issues. Now, I don't know if he had Adam Gaudette not re-signing and not have to do that deal, Scott, if he had in mind that he was maybe going to trade Adam Gaudette, but you get a guy that comes in, again, bottom six forward, you're paying him for one more year at under $1 million. I mean, that's what you get value in bottom six players, guys that can perform on low contracts. Thomas Drantz from The Athletic, of course, we will have him on, Scotty, I believe, later today. He says Canucks pro scouts are said to believe that Highmore has some untapped upside. Club is high on his speed and his work rate.
We'll
I think
see.
It also has to do about that cap hit, too.
Well, that's probably a little bit of it. It's not a lot. I mean, it's not a big change of money between the two. But if this is a player that you didn't see fitting into your future plans, if you thought this is a player you're going to lose for nothing, you get to take a flyer on a guy like Matthew Highmore, find out what he is down the stretch. And as we will talk about with the remaining 19 games for Vancouver, they're going to be crammed into 31 days beginning Friday against the Edmonton Oilers. Part of this is audition process. And I'm not saying that this move is an admittance of that, but let's be real about where the Canucks are, what they have lying ahead of them. Adam Gaudette has been moved today. Dmitry Kulikov is on his way to Edmonton. We will update you on all the trades as they happen. Eventually, we'll get to the best player in Canada. Might not roll it out the exact same way. We do it every single Monday, Karen, but it's trade deadline day, so we're rolling with it. We'll ask you to roll with us as well. 960, 960, 650, 650. Those are your textinations. You want to comment on anything that's been done in the last couple of days, you can certainly do that. We will bring in Ian Mendez of The Athletic next, get a view from him as to what is materializing, certainly not just in Ottawa, but around the North Division, and what he expects to happen over the next couple of hours as well. We'll do that next on Rentoul and Sermon.
Still have it in the zone here. Sutter to the Sutter, Michelle, backdoor gun, and scores!
Now back to Rentoul and Sermon.
I'm pretty appreciative. They waited until we got on the air to start making moves. Look, there are some trade coverage analysts, hosts that have been on the air for 4.5 hours already, and they had nothing to talk about in terms of new deals until now. And those powers that be in New Jersey, Edmonton, Chicago, and Vancouver at least waited until we got on the air, Karen, to have a couple of trades to send your way. Dmitry Kulikov on his way to Edmonton. Adam Gaudette switches homes with Matthew Highmore, who is a depth center coming back to the Vancouver Canucks for the former fifth-round draft pick in Jim Benning's regime, who they thought was going to turn into something, perhaps not what they thought in Vancouver, so he gets a new home. I'm glad they waited until we got on the air, Karen. That's nice of them.
Absolutely. I mean, both morning shows on 960, 650 basically had nothing to talk about except Taylor Hall and if that was a good trade or a bad trade for Buffalo and Boston. Scott, of course, they've got the deal with Toronto being big on trade deadline day or ahead of trade deadline day as well. But yes, thank you for those teams. I expect if there's anything to happen, we're going to have a flurry of some more trades coming down. Scott, of course, the trade deadline ends at noon Pacific and 1 o'clock Mountain Time for our listeners in Calgary.
There are a lot of different angles to hit on the Taylor Hall deal. And when you initially see the return, you say, what is Kevin Adams doing? And look, that may be your takeaway still, that Kevin Adams should have waited. If there's a mistake Kevin Adams made, in my mind, it's that he let Taylor Hall in on the process too early. If there's a mistake that was made, he was going to have to ask Taylor Hall to waive his no trade. So there does come a point in this process where Adams has to go to Hall and say, look, we've got a deal on the table. It's with Team X. Are you willing to go? Maybe he miscalculated the desire to go to one place in particular. Because once Taylor Hall found out it was Boston, by the sounds of what Hall said today in his media availability, Karen, he didn't force the deal there, but he certainly directed the deal there. We know Vegas was in on the conversation. We know there were a couple other teams in and around the edges. Apparently, Toronto wasn't that close to getting in on Taylor Hall, that they wanted a different kind of forward. Nick Foligno fit the exact mold of player they were looking for instead of going out and getting more scoring, perhaps in their top six, perhaps further down the lineup, wherever they were going to slot Taylor Hall if they went out and acquired him. But the fact that Adams went to Hall early, he found out it was Boston, went, you know what, I can go to Boston, that's where I want to be. And maybe part of his thinking, Karen, is maybe I want to sign an extension there as well if things go well.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to get an opportunity to play with a pretty good center in David Krejci. Maybe not, you know, as dynamic as he was at one point in his career, but still a very good second line center. David Krejci's also thinking probably, oh, I have the potential of Taylor Hall on a contract here, Scotty. What can he do coming in for Boston? For Boston, this is a big deal for them. I think it's a perfect deal for them. They didn't have to give up a first round pick, just a second and a prospect that really they don't know too much about when it comes to NHL level. And you know what? they needed help, Scott. Like, Boston, what have we talked about? Yeah, they have injuries on the blue line, but hopefully those guys are going to get healthy. And they went out and got somebody to help them with the scoring. They're coming off an 8-1 shellacking by Washington. And they know if they're to compete with the Washingtons, the Pittsburghs in that division, that they need to, the Islanders, that they need to find ways to put the puck in the back of the net. So for Boston, I love this move. Again, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and you've only committed for him for 17 games and playoffs. That's it. So you look at that. Taylor Hall, I think for him, it was pretty interesting that to hear that Boston had kicked some tires. There was some interest in last offseason as well. And I agree with you. I think Kevin Adams maybe played his hand a little too early. Maybe Boston was one of the first ones in. We do know that three teams were in on him. But, you know, when you give a guy a no-trade contract, a contract or no-trade clause in his contract, Scotty, your hands can be handcuffed at some point in time, and then that could have happened with Taylor Hall.
And here's the other bottom line. There wasn't a big market. There weren't a lot of teams interested to drive up the price and maybe should have waited longer, but this tells you everything about where Taylor Hall's reputation and value has gone. 18 goals in his last 102 games in the National Hockey League, looking to resuscitate that rep, looking to resuscitate a future contract as well. The Bruins also added Mike Riley on the back end. That came from Ottawa, which is where Ian Mendez is. He of The Athletic, and he joins us this morning on NHL Trade Deadline Day. Ian, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
Hey, Scott and Karen. Great to join you. Things are great with me.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. We're not trading you. You made your own decision to get traded to another outlet earlier this year. So that was entirely, like Taylor Hall, Ian, you directed your own future.
There you go. Exactly. I was like a free agent, right? I got a chance to call my shot there.
We will talk about some of the deals that have gone down this morning. They are more depth moves in Edmonton and Vancouver, two teams in different spots in the standings. But Taylor Hall is the biggest talking point of the last 24 hours. He goes for less than Nick Foligno. Is that a bad look for the Sabres? Is it a bad look for the Leafs? Both? Neither? What are your thoughts on the Taylor Hall deal?
What a weird one, right? Because I think if you would have said a week ago that some first-round picks are going to get moved and David Savard, Nick Foligno, and Taylor Hall are going to get traded, you have to pick, go ahead and pick which two of the players are going to end up with going for a first-round pick. I think most people would have probably said, yeah, well, Taylor Hall for sure. And he's the one guy that didn't. And I don't know. Like, I was watching some of the, the coverage this morning on different networks and different things. I see people trying to rationalize, well, there just wasn't a market for Taylor Hall. And I get that. I understand it. I guess from the Buffalo perspective, I would say if you were Kevin Adams, that felt like the type of trade you should pull off at 2:59 Eastern time on Monday. Like today at 2:59, you're like, okay, I didn't get anything better. That's the deal. It was done with like 15 hours to go. That's the thing that I find fascinating. It felt like an absolute, this is all I could get for him. And I don't know, should he have waited and played it out? Could he have maybe pushed that into a first? It's a really interesting one. I kind of just caught the tail end of what Karen was saying about Taylor Hall. I like it from the Bruins' perspective. You're not giving up a first-round pick. You're getting a guy that has a pretty high offensive upside when he's healthy and when he's going. And you're hoping that maybe his issues this year were related to the fact that he was playing for the worst team in the league in the Buffalo Sabres.
Ian, I look at this too when I think of Boston, and maybe it was a case of, okay, this is the best option we're going to give you. We know, I don't know if Boston knew that, Taylor Hall wanted to go there, but, this is the best option that we're going to give you, and if you don't take it right now, maybe we move on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. And that's part of it too, right? Taylor Hall had a little bit of a say of where he could go, and who knows, right? Like, who knows what happened behind the scenes. But this is interesting too, because it's not like the Boston Bruins are home and cooled in a playoff spot, right? Like, I don't have a laptop in front of me, but I think, are they only 4 points up on the Rangers or whatever it is? And so what I think is going to be really interesting in this, and this is me just thinking of the maximum chaos outcome here. Imagine if the Boston Bruins somehow missed the playoffs, and Taylor Hall's reputation of being like the Black Widow only gets worse, because really, and I was talking about this earlier today, like if you think about the players in the league that are considered to be like kind of bad karma and bad luck or whatever, Taylor Hall and Matt Duchene are like neck and neck, right? Like you trade for those players, you acquire them, your team tends to struggle. Boy, I just hope for Taylor Hall's sake that doesn't happen in Boston, because I think it would just, it would amplify it, you know, probably 10 times if that happens to him in a Bruins jersey.
And you're right, Boston is 4 points up on the Rangers for fourth. They do have 2 games in hand, Boston, but it would be funny too, because Taylor Hall, generally he was the good luck charm to get you a first overall pick. So if Boston was to miss the playoffs, could you imagine if that went that way? When I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and I look at what Kyle Dubas has done there, especially in acquiring Nick Foligno, and he gave up a first round pick, as we've mentioned, for Nick Foligno. I look at this situation and see, I want to hear your take on it, Ian, when it's, sometimes it's not about making the splashiest trade, it's about making the right trade. And I feel for Toronto, they thought maybe Taylor Hall was not the right trade, it was Nick Foligno and that player.
Yeah, that, you know what, that's perfectly said, Karen, because I think when you look at Tampa last year, the Tampa Bay Lightning, at the deadline, what did they do? They went out, they got like a Blake Coleman and Barkley Goudreau, and they gave up first-round picks for those players, right? They didn't just go out and get, let me get a splashy high-end offensive player, because we kind of had enough splashy high-end offensive guys. I like this move from Toronto, and okay, maybe they, did they overpay? Well, yeah, maybe, I guess they did. Maybe they did, giving up a first-round pick, but that's the piece that they needed, right? Like, I think if you look at the Leafs year over year, they've added some of that, whether it's sandpaper experience, grit, whatever you want to call it. Wayne Simmonds comes in. Now you get Nick Foligno. Like, these are highly motivated guys. Jason Spezza, Joe Thornton in the mix too. These are highly motivated guys that are seeing the finish line of their careers that want to win a Stanley Cup. So you got that, and then you add them to just an unbelievable quartet of forwards. And I know Tavares isn't having the type of year that he wants to have, but Tavares, Nylander, Marner, and Matthews are as good as it gets in terms of the top four. I love Zach Hyman's game this year. Like, they've got the pieces there. The only question I have, and this is, you know, the thing about the Leafs, the back end is okay. It's the goaltending. And, it, like, if you had a game to win tonight, they would go to Jack Campbell. But can Jack Campbell get this done over 10 weeks or 14 weeks in the scrutiny of the Stanley Cup playoffs? That's what we're waiting to see. And I don't mind the move of picking up a guy like David Rittich, because I think you're getting some goaltending help there, a little bit of depth. But that's ultimately what it's going to come down to. Freddie Anderson has just been okay. He's been a pedestrian goalie in the Stanley Cup playoffs in the last couple of years. And so much of this is predicated on what happens in the blue paint.
Ian Mendez of The Athletic joining us this morning. It is NHL trade deadline day, and we will let you know if anything goes down. We may have to break into this interview if a significant deal is made. You talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, Freddie Anderson as well. I almost have this sense, and I have for quite some time, with his injury and all of the ghosts of playoff pass for this Maple Leafs team. Like, I almost wonder, Ian, if it's going to work out for Toronto this year, if it's going to have to be a Philip Grubauer, Braden Holtby situation, where Anderson starts the playoffs on the bench and then he comes in, and because the pressure's off, he actually performs in that situation. Do you see the Leafs as clearly the best team in Canada going into the playoffs, or just clearly the best regular season team going into the playoffs?
Well, I'll tell you, Scott, like, when you look at the Leafs, and they, like, they have had a really hard time the last few years. And for those of us that live in this part of the country, we have watched them struggle to get out of a division with Boston and Tampa. And even in the last couple of days, you've seen who beefs up at the deadline. It's Boston and Tampa, right? Like, they've done it again in both those cases. And now you're Toronto, and you're looking at this situation, and if the divisions go back to quote-unquote normal next year, you're going to be back in the mix with Tampa, with Boston, which with a much improved Florida team. This is it. Like, this is your window to get to the Final Four. There's no, you cannot sell me on any scenario where the Leafs don't get to the Final Four this year and this season's not an unmitigated disaster. Like, they have to get out. So, like, I think that they're the best team, yes, but boy, that Winnipeg Jets team, guys, when they're going, and if they're all healthy, with that depth that they've got up front, I really like them. I really think that the Winnipeg Jets are the team that could potentially give Toronto fits and be the one that I think can, if you're asking me who do I think other than Toronto can give them a really good, legitimate run for their money, I think it's Winnipeg. And if they can get had a little bit more help on the back end there, I love the forward group. I love the goaltender. I think Winnipeg could potentially be that team in the North Division, and it's going to be fascinating to watch the next couple of hours play out. I see. I think Edmonton has just made a little move. The Habs have made some moves. It's like we've got our four playoff teams set, and now we're going to see a little bit of jockeying here.
And we probably have our playoff positioning set as well, barring something completely unforeseen. Toronto's widened the gap up top. Montreal's far enough back that they likely aren't going to get into the two or three spot where Edmonton and Winnipeg currently reside. And those two teams will probably just jockey for home ice advantage down the stretch. Let's talk about Montreal for a minute, because this is a team that shouldn't have been in the qualifying tournament last year, yet because they were there, we got to see Carey Price of old, and we got to see those big three defensemen take hold. With what Montreal has done, if they're healthy, how much of a scare could the Habs put into the Leafs?
Yeah, and it's a fair question, right? You go back even to opening night. If people can remember back that far to the middle of January, Montreal and Toronto played on opening night, and the Habs kind of hung with the Leafs. And it was kind of an eye-opening moment, I think, for a lot of people. Like, wow, look at the Habs with Josh Anderson and Tyler Toffoli and some of the pieces that they've added. Like, they look like a fast team, a different team. And I would argue, despite all of the ups and downs, I think every Canadian market this year, Vancouver has been through it, Ottawa's been through it, Calgary has certainly been through it, and even Toronto at times, everybody's had these, like, highs and lows. But I don't think anybody's had the highs and lows of the Montreal Canadiens, where it was at one point in the first 12 games of the season, we were like, they're a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. Then 2 weeks later, they fired their head coach and their goalie coach, and they've made a whole bunch of changes. And then now you're kind of like, well, what are they? Are they the Stanley Cup favorite from the first 3 weeks of the season? Are they the team that was just in a free fall? Like, what are they? They're probably somewhere in between. And I think if they can find their game, they could probably put a scare into Toronto, but I really don't see them being able to beat them in a best of seven series. I really don't, unless Carey Price goes full Carey Price, and he's banged up right now, right? So who even knows what his availability is going to be when we get to playoff time. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we haven't had a Habs-Leafs, if I'm not mistaken, a Habs-Leafs playoff series since the 1970s. So since, you know, before a lot of people can even remember. So I think that would be really great for, it would be great for the National Hockey League. It would be great for, the people in this country to really delve into a Habs-Leafs series. But I would have to say Toronto would have the edge there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fully invested in a Leafs-Montreal first-round series, especially when it comes to Toronto's struggles getting out of the first round and having to face a Carey Price. Ian, when it comes to the team that you cover where you live, the Ottawa Senators, they made a couple of moves yesterday. They traded a pair of defensemen to the Bruins. Mike Riley, he gives them some defensive help. And then Braden Coburn, of course, who came over from Tampa in the offseason, goes to the Islanders, both for picks. I'm looking at the Senators right now. They've got Branson, Artem Anisimov, Ryan DeZingle, Anton Forsberg, a couple of more UFAs. Do you expect some more moves from Pierre Dorion?
Yeah, maybe, Karen, like maybe the odd trade, but nothing more, I don't think anything more consequential than what we've seen. And this is, honestly, for those of us in this market, this is a breath of fresh air. You don't understand, like, this market, the last three trade deadlines, it has been anxiety-ridden in the marketplace, right? Because you had J.G. Pageau, you had Mark Stone, you had Matt Duchene, you had Ryan DeZingle a couple of years ago. Like, you have gone to every deadline. In fact, 3 years ago, there was a trade deadline where we were certain that Erik Karlsson was going to get moved, and he didn't. But, like, every year it has been a frenzy. It has been a nail-biting exercise being an Ottawa Senators fan. And this year it was a little bit different. It was like, well, I guess we don't really have anybody to trade. So the only name I'll throw out there that has been kind of low-level, kind of thrown out there is a centerman in Chris Tierney. He may be a type of guy that gets moved only because I think Ottawa doesn't see him maybe fitting next year at this time into their lineup. But he's a terrific penalty killer, great pro, all of that. But again, you're talking about these sort of marginal deals that aren't going to really move the needle, so to speak. Certainly nothing seismic like we've had in the last couple of trade deadlines.
Ian, one of the questions that's come up in the last number of days, given the Canucks' COVID outbreak, and obviously this is not trade-related, is the importance of games to teams like Vancouver, Ottawa, to a certain degree Calgary down the stretch. And should the NHL try to cram all of these games in? What are your thoughts on that with Vancouver now slated to play 19 games in the next 31 beginning on Friday?
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? Like, it is. It's a legitimate question. That's being raised. And I think there's a myriad of answers to it. There's no one singular right answer or wrong answer. As often is the case, the answer is somewhere in the gray area, right in between. And so as you start to unpack all of this, the number one issue I think becomes the players' comfort in doing this, right? Like, are the players comfortable playing? Are the opponents of the players comfortable in engaging on the ice with a team that has just been through COVID? If the answer is yes to those things, I think that's a significant hurdle. But if there's any hesitation from the athletes, I don't blame them. Like, I don't know what the long-term effects of this disease are going to be. What if there's reduced lung capacity for players and athletes that maybe for average people like the three of us, it wouldn't impact us because maybe the cardio that we engage in isn't the same as the hockey players in a 60-minute hockey game, right? So there's a lot of questions here. So if the players and the PA was like, nah, I don't think we should play, I would listen to them. But I'm not hearing that. In fact, I'm hearing quite the opposite that it sounds like. They're interested in playing. They want to get back. So that's a big hurdle. I guess I look at it, there's the unseen hand in all of this, and you would know this too, but television and radio plays a factor in it. I know we don't like to sometimes acknowledge the unseen hand of television and radio and broadcasting, but it's a factor that if these games don't get played, the hockey teams are going to owe money back to, in this case would be Rogers with the Canucks broadcasting rights. Bell Media might need money back from the Senators if they don't play all their games. And in a year in which NHL teams have just been hemorrhaging money, for them to turn around and cut a check, and I know it sounds cold and callous, but absolutely that's a factor. And then I think the last thing is, teams like Vancouver and Ottawa and to a lesser extent Calgary, there are some players on the roster that you want to see what they can do, right? You're going to use the last 15 games as an audition. What do they have? What can we do? Like, so from a general manager's and a hockey operations perspective, there's absolutely value in playing games, especially when, in the case of Ottawa, you had your season shut down last year. You didn't get a preseason. Like, you need to get a look at some players. And I know that that's not exactly the answer that people want. And it's certainly not going to be as entertaining as the Stanley Cup playoffs. But there are some reasons why, you might play these games and get Vancouver to 56.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Ian, and I know it's not a popular answer because I know what the easy thing to do right now is, but I completely understand it, and there are a lot of ways to manage your roster down the stretch, as well as you point out. Great stuff, as always. Keep up the excellent work at The Athletic. I appreciate you making time on what is a very busy day around the hockey world. Have a great week, Ian.
Yeah, you betcha. Have a great day.
That is Ian Mendez, Sam. Always welcome on this show. And I'll get into this more as the show goes on. It's all about trades today, but there are a couple of backstories here. Karen, we know the Flames beat the Oilers on the weekend. Is that game going to matter? There were questions about whether the Oilers should have been playing that game on Saturday night, given the Colby Cave Memorial that happened earlier in the day. Legitimate question as well. There's a lot of uproar about what's happening in Vancouver. I will get into this more as the show continues, Karen. Ian made a lot of really good points there about why the Canucks are coming back, why, from a business sense, this is going to happen. And one of the things I'll tell you right now, and I'll give you some of the evidence next hour, one of the things a lot of people are missing, this is not something the NHL has been reticent to ask other teams to do. There are other teams in the league engaging in this right now, in fact, but because it's happening with a Canadian team that had the largest COVID outbreak among any teams in hockey, it's getting highlighted a lot more. But I will show you that there are situations around hockey where this has been happening for quite some time, and nobody really got up in arms about it. Maybe they should have. You can be of that opinion. That's fine. But nobody said anything until now.
Yeah, we'll get into that as the show goes on. It's very interesting just to think, though, what the reaction has been, Scott, since that came out that the Canucks were going to have to play 19 games in 31 days. A lot of outrage in this market because of the fact you're asking some players not knowing what their health is going to be actually like coming back. Will they be up to NHL caliber hockey health-wise? Like, how will their stamina be? There's a lot of questions surrounding this. So I do understand why maybe market and media type alike are very unimpressed with the fact that the NHL has asked the Canucks to do this. But if you ask the players, they're probably not ideal. This is not the ideal situation, but the entire season has not been an ideal situation. So it's a push to the end. We'll see what the health of the players is. And again, we're expecting them back, having the practice facility open today. That's when Canucks players will go through health and safety again. They'll go through physicals, see where they are, Scotty. But it's going to be a grind. There's no doubt about that.
It's Scott Rintoul. It is Karen Sermon. It is NHL trade deadline day. We'll get into your texts. We will get into a couple of those stories I just mentioned as well, and we will obviously update you on any deals that go down as we count our way down just over 2 hours away from the NHL trade deadline. You've got it with Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Just a couple of deals so far on the NHL trade front this morning. A lot happened on the weekend. A lot happened on Sunday. And we get into some of that throughout the course of this segment. 960, 960 or 650, 650 if you want in on it. The two deals that have gone down today, they do involve two teams in Western Canada. The Edmonton Oilers trade for Dmitry Kulikov. They give up a conditional fourth-round pick that gets upgraded to a third if Edmonton wins a round in the playoffs. Going up against the Winnipeg Jets, maybe that's just going to be a fourth, but I have no idea. We'll see. The only time that Connor McDavid's been to the playoffs in the past, he did win a round, so maybe that's a good omen for the Edmonton Oilers. The other move involves the Vancouver Canucks. Not expected to do much today. People wondered if they do anything small. They've done something small, though in the Canucks fan base, it feels a little bigger than the actual deal it is. Like if you ask people from afar, Karen, Adam Gaudette for Matthew Highmore, there'd be a lot of people who would just going, okay, that's depth move for depth move. And Matthew Highmore is a depth center who's got some speed to his game. He's not projected as anything more than a fourth, maybe third line center if he hits the upside, but probably a fourth line center, and maybe not even that. There's some that wonder if he's going to be a regular NHL player. Adam Gaudette in Vancouver had fallen from a guy who was projected to be their third line center of the future to a guy that the Canucks determined was probably not going to be a center in the National Hockey League. He'd gone to the wing, had not converted on a lot of his scoring chances, and so they give up on one of Jim Benning's draft picks.
Yeah, and it's disappointing, Scotty, because we always thought this was one of Jim Benning's steals of the draft because he was a fifth-round pick, ends up being the Hobie Baker winner a few years ago. So it's disappointing that he didn't work out because I think the potential of what could have been with Adam Gaudette at being the third-line center with the pairing of Horvat and Petey down the middle was pretty appetizing for fans for the Canucks and the Canucks organization in general. This Matthew Highmore, I'm not going to tell you that I know anything about him. I don't think anybody really does except for maybe scouts who watched him within Chicago. There is, you know, he is listed as a center, but it's only taken four faceoffs in the NHL, so maybe he's more of a winger when it comes to that. It's an interesting deal, and it's getting really carved by Canucks fans. I didn't think it'd be as carved as much as it is, Scotty, but maybe because the return is for a player that we just don't know a lot about. This one coming from Elliott and Ladner. So let me get this straight. We signed a 29-year-old veteran that could have fetched a second rounder, of course that being Tanner Pearson, but we gave away a 25-year-old former Hobie Baker winner. Sad time for Canucks fans. And that kind of echoes what we're hearing in the inbox. A lot of uproar with the fact that Jim Benning just got what he just got back for Adam Gaudette.
It is in distinct contrast to what happened in Calgary yesterday. And watching Flames Twitter after the David Riddick move, that's a deal that was widely applauded. Now, those aren't the deals that Flames fans ultimately want Brad Treliving to make. Those deals involve big names like Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, maybe further down the roster, depending on which fan you're talking about. But David Riddick on an expiring contract fetched what most fans like to see on teams that aren't going to the playoffs. Draft picks. David Riddick gets a third rounder from the Toronto Maple Leafs. It won't be realized in this year's draft. That actually comes back to the Flames in 2022. That move widely applauded for a backup goaltender. The move in Vancouver, not so much. And in Edmonton, with what they've done here this morning, I think most Oilers fans say, pretty low-risk ad on the back end, and that's a place that the Edmonton Oilers could use a little help still.
Yeah, absolutely. They needed a left-shot defenseman. Of course, Slater Cuckoo was injured earlier this year. He is back skating, but again, who knows what his timeline is. So it gives him some defensive depth when it comes to Calgary. I like that Brad Treliving, he looked at where he was situational-wise for the Calgary Flames. Scott, we know, we'll talk about this, but the fact is, for the playoffs to happen for the Calgary Flames, it's going to be a long shot. It's basically, they're going to have to win probably about 16 games down the stretch. So it is going to be a long shot, but he looked at it. Okay, I have an asset in David Riddick. what can I get for him? And a third-round pick for a rental goaltender who's a backup rental goaltender, Scott, I think is great, considering the fact that, like, Jonathan Bernier was considered to be one of the top rentals out there in the goaltender market. You've also got Ullmark in Buffalo. And, of course, they're selling everything off, so he could have been appetizing for some teams. Of course, it does sound today like he is staying in Buffalo, but I absolutely like what Brad Treliving does. He's saw the market, got something for it. We'll have to see if he's done. Of course, there's Derek Ryan, a depth center that could be appetizing to a playoff contending team, Scott. And maybe, you know, there was always the rumor, the Sam Bennett rumors as well. However, Sam Bennett, he's kind of flourishing under the Dale Sutter regime.
At least in his own mind, he likes it. And while he still isn't producing the way some people would like, he likes his role. He's made that very clear. This text comes in. Rob from the Ridge, Highmore is faster, better scorer, more productive. Well, the second parts of that are not true. He has not been a better scorer. He is not more productive. Rob goes on to say Gaudette is and has been overrated. Adam Gaudette has been the better offensive player in the National Hockey League. There's no comparison there. Highmore is likely not very much in terms of upside. Is he a role player in the bottom six that can stick? That's what this comes down to. You mentioned the contractual concern a little bit earlier as well, and Adam Gaudette was going to be a restricted free agent, making $950,000.
Ooh.
We're playing in a little music there. I don't know if we got a walk-in there.
I thought it was like our breaking
is that our breaking
sounder.
Trade? Is that our sounder for breaking trades? Look, Adam Gaudette makes 950 G's. He was going to be a restricted free agent. He was potentially a guy that would have been left exposed in the Seattle expansion draft. Based on the trade today, that feels likely to me that he would have been exposed. They save a little bit of money on the cap here, but we don't know if Matthew Highmore is going to be a roster player for the Vancouver Canucks or not. Dean and Komox thinks the Gaudette trade is puzzling. Here's what it comes down to, and you don't have to agree with the Canucks on this. You can carve them for this all you want. They obviously felt he was not going to materialize into a center in the National Hockey League, and they felt that he was a replaceable winger. That's what they felt. There are some wondering, Karen, and this isn't our investigative journalism. That's not what we do for a living, but I wonder if somebody will go down that road. There are some people wondering if because he was patient zero for the Vancouver Canucks, that it may have contributed to him being moved out of Vancouver with the COVID outbreak. And that'll be, for some, a tinfoil hat theory, but there are some people wondering that.
Yeah, I've seen that put out there in the Twitter universe. I think that's just conspiracy theories at this point, Scotty. The Vancouver Canucks, they came out on Friday and the doctor spoke and said, you know what, it was one person, patient zero. Of course, they didn't name names, but we can all assume that it's Adam Gaudette. And from what we've heard, he didn't break any protocols that the NHL had put in place. Maybe suggestions that the NHL has in place, like don't go out for dinner, don't go to certain places, you know, where you could have a higher transmission of getting COVID-19. But from all intensive purposes, we know that Adam Gaudette, or assuming it was him, didn't break any NHL protocols. So I think that, you know what, if you think that, just like put that aside. Like, this is not why the Canucks traded Adam Gaudette. They didn't trade him because he was patient zero for the COVID outbreak. They traded him because I guess they thought he was done in their organization. He had no more to add to this team, and they got something that maybe in return could be a cheap fourth line player down the road.
I want to get to one more text, and then I do want to mention the schedule that remains for the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks. It's all about trades today, but while none are happening, that does bear a little bit of talking here from our point of view. And again, we are less than 2 hours away from the NHL trade deadline. This comes from Mike in Vancouver. I see the Gaudette trade from an expansion point of view, the contract, the cap, etc. But where I'm confused, and maybe you guys can shed some light on this, why are the Canucks ready to move off of Gaudette but are still riding Jake Virtanen? Genuinely curious. Mike, the answer is simple. No other team wants to take on the Jake Virtanen money.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Adam Gaudette is a far cheaper option that Chicago obviously said, you know what, we've seen a little bit of flash there. Maybe this will turn into something. Let's take a chance on Adam Gaudette. Maybe he fits our plan a little better than Vancouver's. Jake Virtanen, he has some value. But what is hurting that right now, Karen, is the fact that Virtanen has a $2.5 million cap hit, and he's owed more real money than that next season as they backloaded the deal. That's what it's about. More on that in just a second. Apparently, we have a deal that has just gone down. We bring in Adam Forsyth to break our latest trade. Yeah, we do have Adam on the wrong mic. Adam is not coming to us from the bottom of a well.
How about now?
Now it sounds better, buddy.
Sounds better.
All
there
right.
Here we go.
Here we go.
You
slick
know,
operation.
Deserves the proper respect.
Let's go. Matthias
Janmark. He deserves
Janmark.
A clean feed.
Where is he going?
He is going to the Vegas Golden Knights. So we have Janmark and a fifth-round pick to Vegas for a second-round pick and a third-round pick. So that is the trade between the Blackhawks and the Vegas Golden Knights.
Wow, that feels like a fairly steep price to pay for Vegas that was in, to a certain extent, on the Taylor Hall conversations. They gave up a second and a third to get Janmark and a fifth-round pick back from the Chicago Blackhawks. Nice player. Not the type of offense I would have expected Vegas to go out and get. Messaged with Mike McKenna last night. He will join us tomorrow, our Tuesday regular, Karen. I said, Vegas got to be in on something, don't they? What do they need? And he said offense. They got to go get offense. Now, Janmark can provide a little, but he's not the type of offensive weapon I would have expected Vegas to go out and try to bring into their lineup to give it a boost.
So 19 goals and 35 points scored over three seasons, or scored 3 years ago. That was his career high. He's on a pace right now, 10 goals, 19 points in 41 games with Chicago. Of course, was just scratched on Saturday. He's someone, Scotty, if it depends which team he went to, he would have been a top six. Doubt he'll be that with the Vegas Golden Knights, but he is a bottom six winger as well. We did find out that Ryan Reeves, of course, Rene Lavoie from TVA said that Ryan Reeves has the potential to be going on LTIR. He did get hurt over the weekend, so it looks like Vegas could need some help. I thought maybe they go a little bit bigger game hunting, Scotty, when it comes to the Vegas Golden Knights, because they do have to compete with what we know is a Colorado Avalanche to get out of that division. So I thought they might have gone a little higher. Again, Scotty, though, they're pretty cap tight. Like, they are in a cap crunch. We knew they were in on Taylor Hall, possibly. We knew they were in on Nick Foligno, at least kicking tires on both of those players. Matthias Janmark does not really equate to those two players, but it'll be interesting to see how he fits probably in their bottom six.
Well, the name that's out there that people are wondering about, and a lot of people think it won't get done, but the name that people are wondering about with Vegas is Ryan Getzlaff.
Yes, that's
Ryan Getzlaff has to waive his no-trade clause to go to Vegas, and they are going to have to do some cap gymnastics to fit his contract in under the salary cap, and whether they use the Sharks, the Red Wings, you name your brokerage.
New Jersey.
Whatever it is, whoever they use, that would need to transpire, and Vegas is well accustomed to doing that. They've been that brokerage for other teams in the past. That's the name that's out there, and what nobody knows for sure is whether or not Ryan Getzlaff would actually go to Vegas, whether he'd be willing to do that. Now, I did see a tweet out there recently. I believe it was from Andy Strickland, who's based out of St. Louis, but is considered an NHL insider, who said that it was broached in the last few days, and Getzlaff is said to at least be considering. It wasn't a full stop no, that he would consider going to Vegas, that there is at least some interest on his part. We'll see if anything transpires in the next hour 45 or beyond, as we know some of these deals come in a little later.
It almost doesn't seem like trade deadline day, Scotty, if we don't have Vegas try and go all in on somebody, because we have seen in the past, of course, it's now Kelly McCrimmon as their general manager, but Bill Foley has, after they went to the Cup final in year one, he's basically cup or bust, Scotty, when it comes to his playoff hopes. So Ryan Getzlaff, of course, his entire career in Anaheim. I mean, the only big issue with him, like you said, cap gymnastics, and I had mentioned off the top two with the Ryan Reeves situation, a little bit of flexibility, but not a lot. $8.25 million for Ryan Getzlaff. So if anything gets done, it has to have a broker in that deal as well.
Speaking of Anaheim, the Ducks factor into what they're saying today. We'll explain how. Let's get to it next.
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
What are you saying?
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
Here's what they're saying.
We'll be bringing in sound throughout the course of the day as things happen and some of these trade targets talk. You heard from Taylor Hall a little earlier in the show. He didn't force his way to Boston, but he directed things to Boston when he found out that was a possibility. He winds up there. Nick Foligno was another big name that was out there yesterday. The Toronto Maple Leafs went and got them as they continue to push more chips in on this potential playoff run. Here is now his former coach, John Tortorella, the guy who he served as a captain under, talking about Nick Foligno heading to Toronto.
Yeah, it's part of it's part of what's happened here. And I remember my first summer after my first year, and I didn't know Nick from Adam. And I talked to him in the summer after first year. I said, I just don't think you're a captain. I just don't know if you can handle some of the leadership stuff that goes with that. And Nick and I were talking about that yesterday, and look what he's become. You know, I'm not sad. I'm excited for the guy. I'm thrilled that I was part of being with him as I've seen him grow, along with the other guys that are leaving here. Remember, we've all been together now for 5 years. And not to get nostalgic, because I'm not going to do that. But it is kind of a little bit of the breaking up of the band, because we went through a lot together as we tried to build this. And I thought we built it the proper way. Went through a lot of stuff with people leaving, and a lot of things went on with this club the past 4 or 5 years. So the guys that are leaving, I wish them nothing but the best. It's a great opportunity to play in playoff hockey. And we're going to keep our relationship, I'm sure.
So there's a number of things that have been talked about here, Karen. Jarmo Kekalainen's procured a couple of extra first-round picks, one in the David Savard deal. He's added third-round picks, seventh-round pick for Riley Nash, Nick Foligno as well. There's been a lot talked about what Kekalainen did. There's been a lot talked about with Savard, Foligno, maybe Riley Nash and the players that are going on. You know what hasn't been talked a lot about? All those guys who are heading out, they're Torts guys. Torts doesn't have a contract after this year. I think we all know where this is headed, and it's going to make it easier to make that move if there aren't remnants of Torts guys on this roster as they try to remake things, perhaps around Patrick Laine and others moving forward.
It's funny you mentioned that, Scott. I didn't think about that. I just thought about the fact that, you know, yeah, the John Tortorella era was done in Columbus, but I thought, too, it was such a disappointing season and where they are in the standings that Jarmo Kekalainen was going to do what he could do to get something for his UFAs. And it's been said, too, like, Nick Foligno helped make this deal. Like, Kekalainen was not going to trade him unless it's a deal that Nick Foligno wanted. And he said, Toronto, okay, my dad's been there. You know, I've got a Sudbury guy, the history of going back and wearing that maple leaf. It was very enticing for him. Also enticing, you look at this Toronto team, and I mean, they are the favorites in the North Division. Winnipeg might have something to say about that, but Toronto is the favorites to get out of the North. So I think he looked at a very good situation. What I want to say there, but what John Tortorella did say about Nick Foligno, though, Scott, is you can tell he holds him in high regard. Like, Toronto is getting a very good player in the locker room. We talk about paying, Scott, for those locker room guys and that intangibles. Maybe Jim Benning played a little bit too much for that with Tanner Pearson, but I think a first-round pick to get a player that exactly Toronto needed, not just the high-end offensive talent, but someone that they needed on their roster and someone that's going to bring that locker room experience. I think it's a great move for Toronto, and I think what Kekalainen got back is great as well.
And with all due respect to the locker room experience, they don't really need that. They don't. They don't need that. They got Joe Thornton.
But just
the
high-character guys,
Scotty.
But,
like, there's so many high-character guys in there. Karen, personally, I see this just more of, hey, here's a guy who plays playoff-style hockey. That's
yeah,
it.
He's a character guy.
That's all great. This is a guy who plays playoff-style hockey. That's what has been missing in Toronto. The guys who are willing to do the hard things at the hardest time of the year, that's what Nick Foligno does. And it's why they went that direction instead of the Taylor Hall direction.
I just was saying, Scott, and I said that too. I said, like, he's a guy that Toronto definitely needs. Again, Kyle Dubas didn't go out and get the splashy hit. He made the hit that was right for their roster. He's a guy that's going to go to the strong areas. He's gritty. He hits. He's going to come into this team now, and he's going to lead the Lehman Tip on hits by 40 hits. Jake Muzzin had 69, and Nick Foligno had 109. So you know he's going to bring that physical presence in the postseason. And I just think I was saying more of the high-character guy. He's just a good guy that John Tortorella doesn't usually speak really highly of certain guys, right? And he does of Nick Foligno. So I think that, yeah, character is one thing, but I think it's more, I do believe, I agree with you this, what happens on the ice is exactly what Toronto needed, and that's why they brought him in. It just happens, you know, he's a really good guy in the locker room.
That rep is what helped them land a first-round pick and a third-round pick in return, or pardon me, fourth-round pick, I believe, in return in the Nick Foligno deal. Taylor Hall's rep is why his market wasn't higher, and the fact that he had a no-movement clause. Elliot Friedman spoke about that. It's not the market that the Sabres ever envisioned developing, and here's what Friedman had to say about where his rep is right now around the league, Taylor Hall.
You know, look, like, I think when we all heard the return last night, I think there was a lot of surprise. You know, he's a player whose reputation has taken a hit. You know, the way I look, though, at Taylor Hall is this. I don't know if I mentioned this to you guys, but I've said this in a couple places. here's a guy who, when they were in the middle of their awful losing streak, I think they'd lost 12 in a row at the time, they go into New Jersey and he takes a slap shot off the face. Like, he's in front of the net and he gets hit in the face. And I remember watching that game and saying, oh my God, like, we're not going to see him the rest of the year. Like, there's no need for this. And he was back a period later. And as far as I'm concerned, anybody in that situation who has that attitude, there's something there, right? Now, I think that the trade shows that obviously his reputation is down. You know, one of the things about the Bruins is they're one of the worst teams in the league at scoring at 5-on-5 off the rush. Hall is having a bad season in terms of finishing, but he creates chances. I understand the marriage. I do. And I'll tell you this, it wouldn't surprise me in the least if one of the reasons he's happy to go to Boston is that he thinks they might want to keep him. Boston was one of the teams that was really into him this year, but they couldn't get it done because they had to move pieces out to get him signed. So I think he's done this. I think he's looking at this with an eye to the future, and I think he's a fit for what they need, but there's no question in the eyes of the general managers, he's a devalued asset right now. So he's got to pick himself back up.
He has 18 goals in his last 102 games. Like, the bottom line just hasn't been there for Taylor Hall. And there's a lot of hope that he can give the Bruins what they need, and maybe it'll be the right fit. But there's a reason that there weren't a lot of teams trying to go get Taylor Hall right now.
Scotty, if you had said to me even, say, a month ago, we knew Taylor Hall was going to be on the move, basically. Maybe not a month ago. It was 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, in the midst of their 18-game losing streak. But Taylor Hall likely on the move, though. If I had said to you that Taylor Hall is going to move for less than a first-round pick, what would your first word have said? What would you have said?
I'd be surprised.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or I would have said that they won't retain money. That's the other thing I would have said. And they did. They ate half of his money to do this as well. But there just wasn't the market out there for him.
And I think that's a shocking thing, and maybe that's shocking for Taylor Hall as well. Maybe he took a hit to his ego with what's happened this season. Of course, he signed that $8 million contract this past offseason, betting on himself in Buffalo. He was going to go in there. He was going to play with Jack Eichel. He was with Ralph Kruger, and one of the best seasons he's had in his career was under Ralph Kruger in Edmonton. So I think he bet on himself, and obviously it didn't work out. Like Elliot said, I mean, his shot rate right now, he's like, it's at 2%. Like, it is historically low when it comes to Taylor Hall. I mean, over the past couple seasons, it's been below 10%, but still, I mean, 2% is absolutely awful. So when you look at Taylor Hall, just a bad season. I do see this as maybe a fresh breath of fresh air. This is the best team that he's ever played on, Scott. Like, the best team. You could say, yeah, he took New Jersey to the playoffs a couple of years ago. Yeah, he dragged a New Jersey team that wasn't very good into the eighth round, into an eighth spot in the playoffs. Got him the Hart Trophy. But for Taylor Hall, this is the best group of forwards he's going to play with, the best team around him. And guess what? He doesn't have to be a first-line scorer with this team. He gets to be a second-line scorer. He's not going to go up there all the time against the other opposition's top defensive pairing or their shutdown line. He's going to have opportunities in Boston.
What does it tell you that the Penguins went out and dealt for 36-year-old Jeff Carter, who has another year left on his deal? And yes, the cap hit is lower, and yes, the Kings retained some money, but the Penguins went out and dealt for Jeff Carter instead of Taylor Hall. Hey, maybe they didn't want to give up a second-round pick. But should, I mean, really, in 2021, should that be a real conversation about who scores more?
Here's what I look at. Do you think Taylor Hall is a Berkey guy? No, I don't think so. I think Berkey's like, yeah, you might have some upside on the scoring, but he's not a Berkey guy. Jeff Carter's definitely a Berkey guy. You know, he's got, he can step in to be your second line center with Evgeny Malkin. Well, he's still out. If not, he kind of falls into a third line center. He's a big body. Scott, he goes to the net. Most of his goals come from that low slot net front presence. So I do think that this is what happened in Pittsburgh is not necessarily about Taylor Hall, but about what Brian Burke sees him a forward and for that team.
Jeff Carter has 38 goals in his last 176 games. Like, his best days are long behind him. And hey, Fountain of Youth, maybe it exists in Pennsylvania where he began his career, just not with that team. We will get you the deals as they happen. Not a lot going down, but there are names out there. Does Ricard Raquel move at some point in time? One of the big names that moved this weekend, David Savard, he's headed to Florida, just maybe not the team you thought he'd end up with. He's with the Lightning. So is Dave Randorf, the play-by-play voice, joins us next on Rintoul and Sermon.
Security here is pretty tight.
And now Patch ready for the left circle in front. Tip play, Marchessault is stopped by Demko again.
This is Demko's house. Sportsnet 650 is the official home of the Canucks.
Our trade deadline coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor with locations across Western Canada. Purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online at Sherritt.com.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
I got a question for you. You tell me, which is the best team in the Central? The Central, just to refresh everybody's memory out there, is the division that includes the Carolina Hurricanes, the Tampa Bay Lightning, defending Stanley Cup champs, in case you've forgotten, and the Florida Panthers. They are separated by 2 points between all three teams in the standings. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. So you tell me, Sermon, Carolina, Tampa Bay, Florida, which is the best team in that division?
Oh, my goodness. I'd probably have to go with Tampa Bay only because of the defending cup champions, and maybe they have the experience, of course, how to get back there for a second straight year. But I don't know, Scotty. Honestly, I mean, I'll have to admit, they're not exactly on TV all the time, so it's hard to watch them right now. And you look at the standings, Scott, in the Central. Last Wednesday, Florida was first. Then, I think, on the weekend, Friday, Tampa was first. And now Carolina's first. It's going to be the ever-rotating top three to see who gets that top spot. And guess what? That top spot in the Central has to be very coveted by one of those three teams, Scott, because it's going to be one of those three teams, because Nashville right now is the fourth-place team at 47 points. Of course, they're 9 points back of Florida for third. Chicago is still in the mix. They're 4 points out, and Dallas is 6 points out, if my math is correct there, with some games in hand. But if you're Carolina, you're Tampa Bay, you're Florida, you're making all the moves that you can to finish first in the Central.
Adam Gaudette headed to Chicago to help the Blackhawks playoff push if they can find their way there. They were one of the upstart teams in the first half of the season. They've come back down to earth, but as you mentioned, still in the mix. Adam Gaudette, now a former Vancouver Canuck, the fifth-round pick in 2016, headed to Chicago for Matthew Highmore, a player that very few hockey fans know much about, hasn't played a ton. He's not an offensive upside guy. He's got some wheels to his game. He's a bottom six player at best in the National Hockey League, according to most projections. He's a little cheaper option. He is under contract for next season. He seems to fit the profile, and we'll get comparisons later on, but he seems to fit the Jace Howerluck profile as much as anything. A guy who's got some wheels, doesn't finish that much. You hope he's defensively responsible, but he is a low-cost option in and out of your bottom six. That's basically the profile he fits.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, Scotty. The Jim Benning's, we'll say, Jim Benning's getting carved in the inbox, 650, 650, when it comes to this deal for the Vancouver Canucks. Of course, you know, there was Hobie Baker winner, hopefully top third center to going forward down the road with Bo Horvat and Elias Pettersson. Of course, this season hasn't gone the way that Adam Gaudette has wanted, but Jim Benning made a move to bring in a very affordable, if he turns out to be something at least, or in the bottom six, right? Probably a fourth line player, winger, center, we don't know. He hasn't played much center in the National Hockey League, at least when it comes to taking some faceoffs. But Jim Benning always gets carved for the fact he overpays for bottom six players. You know, he got carved for the Danner Pearson signing. So take a look at this. It's cheap for Jim Benning. I don't think there's a whole heck of a lot of risk when it comes to it, or maybe not a lot of reward either, but at the end, maybe he is an NHL player. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not going to tell you I know anything about this guy other than his name.
But well, on paper, Adam Gaudette's a higher upside guy. He's a higher upside guy than Matthew Highmore, and that's why fans are upset.
If you weren't going to protect him in the expansion draft, you could have lost him for nothing. So you got something. You have 19 games now. You can get him here, get him in the lineup. Maybe he plays a little bit down the stretch. You can see what he got.
Yep, and that's what they'll probably do, and we'll see where he fits in, if he fits in with the Vancouver Canucks. The Calgary Flames have yet to do anything this morning. They made the move with David Riddick yesterday. I did get a text saying that most Flames fans not happy with the term for David Riddick, which boggles my mind to a certain extent. This is a goaltender that, while he did go to the All-Star game a year ago, he was displaced by two different goaltenders in the last 2 years. He got displaced by Cam Talbot down the stretch last year in Calgary and wasn't the goaltender of record come playoff time. He got displaced by Jacob Markstrom in the offseason and early this year as well. You get a third-round pick for your backup goaltender who you're going to lose to unrestricted free agency in the offseason anyway. That feels like a win to me for Brad Treliving.
It's called asset management, Scotty. You've got a UFA who you're not going to re-sign. You don't want to lose him for anything, so you get something. You know, the Calgary Flames weren't going to be riding the back of David Rittich into the playoffs. You know, if that's going to happen, they're going to make a push. It's going to be on the back of Jacob Markstrom. So,
well,
we
know the Tampa Bay Lightning are headed to the playoffs. And without any further ado.
And on the back of a certain goaltender.
Oh, boy. Is he a good one? Nobody's trading Andrei Vasilevskiy anytime soon. Certainly not Dave Randorf, play-by-play voice and friend of the program for a very long time, joins us this morning from sunny Florida. Thank you very much for doing this. Rambo, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. Nice to meet you over the phone, Karen. I was listening to your lead in there. Karen, are you telling me you're not watching Lightning games on a nightly basis? What's going on there? You're not watching what's going on here?
Okay, so I've just been hired recently by the station and just had the ability to now watch games streaming for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I'm well aware so. That it, north of the border where I'm from, it is all about the north. And it's certainly in Vancouver, it is all about the Canucks. So I get it. So no problem. I was just joking.
All right, so you tell me. I'll pose the same question to you. And I know there's a little bias involved in the fact that you see Tampa Bay more closely than any other team. Which is the best team in the Central right now? Lightning, Panthers, or could it be the Hurricanes?
That's a great question, and I'm not going to give you an answer off the top of my head because, the point I wanted to make right off the bat is that those top three teams, they are top three teams in the league. There's no other division right now that can boast a top three that is as strong and as competitive as those three teams. And I know that this is, I get it. A lot of your listeners don't watch this division a lot, but you've got the defending Stanley Cup champions. You've got the Carolina Hurricanes who always fly under the radar. And you got the Florida Panthers who have not really been, a competitive kind of elite ranked team for many years. But we'll start with them. This is year two of Joel Quenneville. And people forget, Joel Quenneville's the coach there now. And we all know about his resume. And so last year was a bit of a transition year for him as he tried to bring the Coach Q structure and chemistry and culture into that program. And they struggled with a brand-new goaltender, an expensive goaltender in Sergei Bobrovsky, who had an off year last year. And he seems to have been playing better. And it seems as though Coach Q has got this team playing the way that we used to see those Chicago Blackhawks teams playing back in the day, with results, accountability and wins, basically just wins. You know, it was interesting to see one of the off-season acquisitions they brought in was Patrick Hornquist. They bring in a two-time Stanley Cup champion, a guy who's been there, done that, and immediately slap a letter on his jersey. And, just watching them play, you can tell that they needed that element to go along with the stars, two of the most underrated stars in the entire NHL, in Alexander Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau. If you don't see these guys play regularly, when you do flick on a Panthers game, you go, wow, Barkov is just a horse. He's just a possession monster. Huberdeau's got ultra skill, and they can put this team on their back, one of them, let alone both of them. And then you add in all the other points that they've got. Now, the big problem that they've experienced recently is that they lost Aaron Ekblad for the season due to an unfortunate incident, a non-contact kind of awkward fall. So he breaks his leg and he's done for the year. And that's a big, big loss for them. That goes without saying. Power play guy, a guy who had rediscovered he had a down year by his standards offensively last year, as kind of everybody did, but he had rediscovered that and was really playing very well. So they've lost three in a row right now, but they're a good team. Carolina is another team that flies under the radar that nobody really knows about. And quite frankly, I've seen a lot more this year of than I have in recent years. And they're a hungry team night after night. Rod Brind'Amour, BC's own, has really instilled a level of compete in this group up and down its roster that they punch way above their weight. You look at this team on paper and you think, man, how are they doing it? Well, they compete their tails off on a nightly basis. In fact, they just had a couple of head-to-head games with Florida, and I was watching one of the games. And if I could use an analogy, it was like you threw a bone with scraps of meat on it into the corner, and you had a bunch of wild dogs fighting after that puck from both sides, Florida and Carolina. That's how they play. That's how this division is. It is really a defensive, aggressive division that where there's not a lot of space out there to make decisions with the puck, and mistakes are capitalized on. So you got Carolina, and then you got Tampa Bay, which is, for the first two-thirds of this season, they were one of the top teams in the league without question. They still are statistically, but I'm going to be honest here and say the last 10-game segment, they have not been playing well. They've not been playing very well defensively has been their problem. And their offense has kind of dried up in the last four or five games from their top guys. They're getting a huge contribution right now from fourth lines and their third line with Yanni Gourde, Blake Coleman, and Barclay Goodrow. They're really kind of floating their boat, but they're making defensive mistakes and defensive coverage mistakes that we just haven't seen. And I don't know whether it's just their structure's gotten away, or it's a little fatigue or a little bit of hangover settling in. There's no panic in this room, and David Savard is certainly going to help, but right now they're not at the top of their game. Having said that, that's my long answer to kind of give you guys a snapshot of what this Central Division was like. This top three, it is going to be a dogfight to get out of this division into the next round, the third round.
No question it is. Absolutely. And boy, do you want to finish first, given what lies ahead with one of those two teams having to play one of the other three in that first-round matchup if you finish in that 2-3 slot. Dave Randor, play-by-play voice of the Lightning, joining us here on NHL Trade Deadline Day. You mentioned the deal to add David Savard. Where does he fit on Tampa's blue line right now, and how big was it to not only get him but also keep him away from those Panthers that you talked about?
Yeah, I mean, David Savard was a again, for your listeners who don't watch a lot of the Columbus Blue Jackets, he's a big dude. Like, he's about 6'2", 6'3", but he's a big, heavy guy, like 230. He blocks shots. He's regularly one of the top shot blockers in the league. He plays physically. He's in the top two in both departments on their team this year, on a Columbus team that is really has had an off year in a lot of different ways, but he competes. I heard you guys talking about Nick Foligno, you know, and they've got some guys like that who've been there a long time that really compete, and Savard is one of those. And despite the way he plays, he does not pick up a lot of penalty minutes, which has been a problem for the Lightning, actually, of late. They're one of the most penalized teams in the league. They've got the most fighting majors, but they also take a lot of stick infractions, and that is catching up to their penalty kill. So it's great that a guy like Savard can come in, add that heft and weight and grit to their defensive game, but not without taking, adding a whole lot to their penalty minutes on a nightly basis. He is a right shot defenseman, which is a lot like a left-handed pitcher. These guys are prime candidates to be added to any roster. So where does he fit in right now? We're going to hear from John Cooper in about an hour from now, and we'll see where he's got him slotted. I don't know what's going on at practice right now because they're on the road. But I think he might start with Hedman. I think he might start with Victor Hedman. His regular partner is out right now in Jan Ruda. Ruda is a low-key, under-the-radar, steady-eddy guy, and he plays that right side. And then when you line up the right side of Tampa Bay's blue line now, you would have Savard, in no particular order, Savard, Eric Chernak, who is a load and a punishing physical presence on that right side, and then a rookie in Cal Foote, who's still finding his way but has shown real solid growth in his first year, the son of Adam Foote, and he plays like that. He's got a heck of a hard shot, but he also can play a physical style as well. So that's a pretty decent right side, and that's where Savard is going to be. Whether or not he plays with Hedman or Ryan McDonagh, it'll be one of those two. But I'm guessing he starts with Hedman tomorrow night in Nashville.
Dave, how does Julian Breezeball continue to pull off deals like this? Because we saw what he did at the trade deadline last year and now this year again. I mean, eventually you can't keep giving away first-round picks, but obviously he thinks, I'm going all in again. We can get out of this division, or to get out of this division, we need this player. But how does he keep pulling this off? Because I tell you, it seems like teams are lining up to help him make these deals.
Well, it was funny to read a lot of the Twitter reaction after the Savard deal, and then, you know, the Lightning played a man short in their last game because of cap reasons, and Savard was added immediately, and they're still working that out right now because they're right up against the cap. And mm-hmm. and everybody's already, outside of Tampa Bay, all fans and media people are all already freaking out in that they will add Kucherov in the playoffs, a $10 million player. And everybody thinks, oh, this is cap circumvention and all this kind of stuff. And it's kind of funny to hear everybody losing their minds over the fact they can add a guy like David Savard despite being right up against the cap. But he's done it. Julian Brisebois has done a masterful job at a complicated three-way trade between Columbus and Detroit and the Lightning to balance the checkbook. His assistant general manager and the guy who's really in charge of all this, too, is Matthew Darche, who is a former player. He played for the Canadiens and the Lightning, and he's a graduate of McGill, and as is Brisebois, lawyer. These are smart guys and also smart hockey men. And they've managed to balance their checkbook and their salary cap, but it's not like they got this stuff for free, as you point out, Karen. They gave up two first-round picks last year to acquire Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow. And that line with Yanni Gord at center ice, you know, a lot of people will tell you they don't win the Stanley Cup without that line. And while there's been a lot of line juggling of late as John Cooper tries to keep things fresh, I think you'll see that line remain intact the rest of the way going into the playoffs down the stretch here because it's such an important group. So they give up another first-round pick to get David Savard, and that's what it costs. That's what mm-hmm. Toronto had to pay for Nick Foligno, who's not going to score you a bucket full of goals at all. He's that character piece, that face-off winner, that physical presence, and that character guy. And that's what these things cost when you feel your time is now. You know, this is it. The Lightning are not building for 4 or 5 years down the road with these moves. They're trying to win another Stanley Cup and do something that is very rare and very difficult to do in the era of the salary cap. And they've got as good a shot as anybody right now once you add David Savard. This is a very good team. And how do they do it? It takes a very good capologist, and it takes a lot of nerves to give up yet another first-round pick because that's 3 in 2 years, and that puts a lot of pressure on a guy like Al Murray, who's their director of scouting, who is mined. If you look at this roster, a lot of their key players were nowhere near first-round picks. Braden Point was a third-round pick. Yanni Gord was never drafted. Barclay Goodrow, never drafted. You know, there's a lot of high-end guys, of course, like Stamkos and Sergachev, who they acquired in a trade, but they gave up a first-rounder to get him. But there's a lot of players up and down this roster. Matthew Joseph, there's Ross Colton, this rookie sensation. He's a fourth-round draft pick. So Al Murray has been able to find some gems, and they've been able to develop them. So that's what you need to do, and they've got that within the structure of their organization.
Do you have an update at all on the health of Steven Stamkos, Dave?
No, we don't. And that's a big question mark for sure. Yeah. He's their leading goal scorer. He's had an excellent year. He's got 17 goals, 10 on the power play. That's amongst the league leaders in that category. He's their best faceoff man. He's their captain. And they won one cup without him last year. He played all of, 3 minutes in the Stanley Cup final and scored a goal in that legendary shift that he had against the Dallas Stars. But to do it again would be a big ask. Just because of what he brings, and can you do that twice without a player of that caliber? But it was an innocuous play the other night where he was reaching for a puck and tweaked something. He's had a core surgery recently and a hip surgery, and the fear is it's something related to his core that could set him back. And this poor guy who's a franchise player. He's a first overall pick. Spent his whole career here. He's loved in this community, as I've found out by living here now. But he's had problems staying healthy. And I hate the word injury prone because nobody goes out there trying to get injured, or some guys just can't stay healthy. And he's battled a lot of injuries. And this year he's been relatively healthy, and he's been playing very, very well. And to potentially go out of the lineup for something that was really no contact whatsoever would be a real tough blow. So we'll find out more when we hear from Cooper in about an hour. He did not play the other night, and he's not expected to play tomorrow night. And then beyond that, we'll find out. But I don't have an update for you right now.
Okay. They just need him for 2 minutes and 47 seconds in the Stanley Cup final. If he's good for that and it works out the same way, then it's all good. Ramble, you stay healthy. We're going to try to do the same here, buddy, and I look forward to better times when we can get together in person and Tampa Bay Lightning or visiting teams in Western Canada in future years.
Yeah, me too. Can't wait to come on up there, and that'll be great. But thanks for having me on, guys, and enjoy the rest of trade deadline day.
Thank you, Dave. That is Dave Randorf, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. We don't have another deal to announce in terms of a trade, but we do have a deal to announce here, Karen. Let's bring in Adam Forsyth, who is breaking trades on this NHL deadline day. And, Adam, it sounds like someone's off the market.
Yeah, a lot of teams were chasing Alex Iafallo, who was a pending free agent, but the Los Angeles Kings have signed the forward to a four-year extension, and he's cashed in. It's $4 million a season, so a four-year, $16 million deal for Alex Iafallo, and a little bookmark to that Matthias Janmark deal from earlier in the day. Because Vegas didn't have the cap space, they brought in the San Jose Sharks as a broker to take a bit of a cap hit. So Vegas, in addition to sending a second and third round pick to Chicago for Matthias Janmark, they sent a fifth round pick to San Jose, so it's a bit of a three-way deal there.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much for that, Adam Forsyth, bringing us that news. And again, this is how you acquire a bunch of picks to use in future years to get different assets along the way. You act as a brokerage. Iafallo was a guy that the Leafs were said to be kicking the tires on, maybe try to bring him to Toronto if he was going to be on an expiring deal and they couldn't get something done. He cashes in at 4x4. I can tell you this, just a very small backdrop to that. There were already people in Vancouver saying if Alex Iafallo comes in at less money than Tanner Pearson, I'm going to be more upset at the Tanner Pearson signing from last week in Vancouver.
Well, there you go. He didn't. He signed above what Tanner Pearson does. I know that for the LA Kings, Scott, they always from the beginning wanted to re-sign him. I think this was pretty much a priority for them. So to get this done, this is good for them. A 27-year-old, of course, 10 goals, 24 points in the 38 games he's played this season, tracking towards a pretty career season for, you know, an 82-game schedule of what he's done prior in his career. He plays on the power play for them. He plays on the penalty kill. So he's a big, I think, that's a big, not addition to their team, but just to be able to keep him for 4 years down the road. Of course, with San Jose, Scott, now they've got a fourth and a fifth for taking on salary. Like, it's San Jose, it's Detroit. I'm not sure how much more Detroit would be in the brokerage situation. Also, New Jersey has been out there and taking on salary contracts as well. But it looks like San Jose, they're helping teams out, Scott, to set them up for better down the road with all these extra draft picks.
Well, we'll see what other teams do. You know, Ottawa has the ability to take on a little bit of cap if they want to. LA is another team that could be in that mix. We'll see what happens. Florida's got some cap space to use. Do they get something done in the next hour? Do they add more down to take on the Tampa Bay Lightning, take on the Carolina Hurricanes as well?
They've got about, what, $9 million, I think? Is that what I saw left in cap space the Florida Panthers have? Of course, we forgot to mention they did sign Nikita Gusev as well, as, of course, he was bought out by New Jersey, so he signs a one-year deal as a UFA. Hope is for him, Scott, he can come in there and, again, new lease on life for a player that had high expectations signing in New Jersey.
Canucks have made a smaller move today, though there is big reaction in Vancouver. The Flames, a more sizable move on the weekend with David Riddick. Oilers have brought in Dmitry Kulikov. We will update you on any moves that happen. Take your reaction as well. And yes, I will get into what remains on the schedule. We didn't get there because we had a breaking trade with Matthias Janmark a little bit earlier in this hour. We'll get there next hour with Rintoul and Sermon.